What is up, everybody? This is Alex once again with the EOT Newsflash Network. This is episode 19. We're back after a Christmas hiatus, and since we can't spoil Star Wars yet, we're going to sort of spoil some magic cards.
It's a good way to go. Play it safe.
And of course, you probably already heard, Sean is here back in the studio with us. How's it going, Sean?
Doing pretty good.
Christmas was good for you?
Yeah, I've been off work for 2 weeks. It's a good time.
Sweet. That must be nice.
Oh, it's the best. Sleep in and relax all 2 weeks.
Awesome. Did you get any magic-themed Christmas anything?
Not really.
I didn't either.
got a small number of items, mostly like a blanket and some cash. So the cash will go towards some magic. So
yeah, in the grand scheme of things, a cash and a blanket will get you very far in life.
Exactly. Yeah, especially because it decided to get cold out of nowhere like a couple days
ago. Oh, God, it's been miserable.
Yeah, it's
absolutely miserable.
Nice and shocking.
But yeah, so we're back. Christmas is over. We're rolling straight into New Year's coming up on Thursday. So we'll all be good and toasty in more ways than one, hopefully.
Yeah. The only bad part is that represents like less than a week until I go back to work. And we
can't think about that.
Staunchly opposed.
Oh. When you go back to work on the 4th, right?
Yeah, the 4th starts my teacher work days.
Yeah, then my school starts back up on the 4th too, so I'll be in the trenches with you too. So
it's the worst.
Power on, brother. Power on.
I mean, I love it. It's the best. Kids are the future. So forth.
Well, awesome. So, and of course, we are getting pretty close to Oath of the Gatewatch coming out here in less than a month, actually. And so we're going to talk about some spoilers tonight. And we're actually going to be doing a full set spoiler show or review show probably the week before the pre-release. I don't know if we're going to be able to be here eating pizza and just staring at computer screens, probably like six of us or how many we can get in here, and just pouring over the set and giving it dumb grading system. We'll see.
It's going to be a piece of art. I don't know. I think anyone not listening to that, like if you listen to anyone else's previews, you're just wasting your time. Or
all right then.
Or don't trust me. It's one of those two options.
Why keep your resources limited when you can come to the?
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, turn their own name into a burn.
Shots fired. Yeah. Shots fired.
If they want to ever sponsor a player, I don't support his statement, and they're a great organization. So there's also that.
Okay. So yeah, we're going to talk about some spoilers tonight. But the big thing for tonight, it's going to be our first strike, Saffron Olive over there on MTG Goldfish, which is a site that I go to far more often than I probably need to, looking at deck lists, articles. It's a great website, and Saffron Olive there posts some really good thought-provoking articles, and he did one recently called Love Hate Colorless Mana. And basically he broke down his thoughts on colorless mana versus generic mana. So we're going to talk about this for a little bit, and the pros and the cons and the things that it just messes up in general.
And the ways to change your view so you don't hurt yourself in the first few weeks.
Yeah. Because as a new player, you're going to sit down and open your pre-release packs of 4th of the Gatewatch and 2 Balfour's Endicar, and you're going to see some things that don't actually... They look like they don't go together, but they actually do. And that's, like Sean said, it's all perspective on this one.
You're going to start adjusting it now, and that way you don't have to adjust it on the spot.
Yeah. You don't have that really awkward situation of, can I cast this card? No, you can't, but it's in your deck.
Nothing's worse than when you lay down a card and they go, you can't cast that, and you go, well, forget I did that. I'm going to put this back in my palm and continue with your day.
Not even, I miscounted my mana. Mm-hmm. My mana just doesn't actually produce enough color, anything, to cast it.
Yeah, unfortunately, Jedi mind tricking does not work there. They do not forget that those are the droids they're looking for.
Are there droids in this set?
I hope
not. Well, they're drones.
There's drones.
So those, that's kind of the same thing.
Which reminds me completely off point. My friend proxied the Star Wars limited set, so we got to do that at some point.
Oh, yeah. Have you guys gotten to play with it at all yet?
He printed it off. We haven't had a chance to actually battle with it. It looks awesome. Man.
If you guys haven't seen this, just Google Star Wars Magic Set. Somebody built
an entire cube.
Yeah.
It's like, I think it was a small set, so like it was like 180 cards.
It felt big, though.
Yeah, that was pretty big.
And it's all based on the shards, too. So Grixis, mm-hmm. Bant, yep. Esper, Jund, and Naya are all presented by factions in the Star Wars universe. And it's all really, really cool.
It was relatively well power leveled, and like nothing was just stupid.
Yeah, you definitely get a couple. Really, you get a couple of obvious reprints. I think like Lightning Bolts in there. So like obvious cards, but then you have cards that make sense inside the universe of Star Wars. So you get like Luke Skywalker, and you get spaceships and things like that.
You get a Death Star.
You do get a Death Star.
I think there's a Darth Maul and a Darth Vader. I don't know about the Darth Maul, but there's like a Boba Fett and a Han Solo. It's awesome.
Yeah. So we'll definitely do that and bring you a review of that.
Yeah.
That's pretty sweet. So yeah, back to colorless and generic mana. I'm going to be very careful about saying which one is actually which tonight, because it's very confusing.
That's the new phrase to use. Yeah. Stop referring to it as colorless mana, refer to it as generic.
Yeah. So essentially what we've got here is the new colorless mana is officially the sixth color, in air quotes. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like there are two types of colorless mana. Like we said, we have generic mana, which is always going to be paid. You can pay for any number that had a circle on your magic card. Any mana can pay generic mana. But this new colorless mana, which is going to be on the waste mana, all of the Eldrazi Scions that produce this, lots of cards that you actually probably already own produce this mana now because of Errata's and how that all works. Mm-hmm. And so we've got two shades of it, essentially. You have your colorless, and then you're slightly less colorful, if that makes sense.
I would say, before we dive in, just for anybody who doesn't know, because it took me a while to understand that, was the phrase errata means that they will go back and adjust, for anybody who doesn't know, if you already know, then ignore me, but they will go back and they'll adjust what the words on a card say digitally. So on their rules website, it actually says something different, even though the card doesn't say the same thing. And that is to fix broken cards, fix confusing situations, or in this case, say that if a land taps for a true colorless mana, not a color, but a true color symbol, it's no longer a one with a circle around it. It is now this new diamond shape.
Yeah. And I will get into some of the number of errata cards we're actually getting, because the number is actually shockingly high.
Now that's just a ballpark. It might be higher than that.
Yeah, it's definitely a very rough estimate right now, but we'll get to that here in a minute. So put yourself in the shoes of the new player, mm-hmm. Timmy Magic player. You know, you're 6 years old, you're on your first pre-release, and you open up your booster packs, and so you've got cards that have the generic mana, and we have colorless mana. So as a new player, what are you looking for to help you distinguish those two things from each other?
I think it's going to be just simply, you want to break it down as a new phrase. So instead of the number with a circle around it, referring to it like we've been doing, as referred to as generic mana or just mana in general, any form of mana will produce that generic mana. Colorless mana means it has to be purely a colorless source. It cannot, for example, currently in Standard, we have the Pain Lands, the Avamaya Coasts, the Llanowar Wastes. Those have the option of tapping for a colorless mana, or you pay a life and add a color. So those would produce this purely colorless waste symbol or true colorless symbol that you could use to cast the restricted cards. So no longer view the number with a circle around it as colorless. Review it as mana or generic mana, meaning any source can produce it. Ideally, the best way to type that would be if they did a rainbow color behind it to show it can be anything.
Yeah.
But that would be unrealistic color-wise. It would bleed too much. It'd be hard to read. You wouldn't really know what it is. Why do they put a number over it? So instead, they just left it with the same symbol. So realize that is, think of it as a circle encompassing all mana.
Yeah.
So that concept. It's a circle that any form of mana produces this. The triangles narrow that circle into an exact pinpoint.
Yeah. Kind of like that. I think that's the best way to look at it. And once, I think if they had just called this colorless mana, because it's waste mana, but if they had just called it something other than colorless, it might have made a little bit more sense.
Well, and it's because of the long going thing. I think the mistake was they probably should have identified they were going to do this a long time ago.
Yeah.
Introduced this concept, or at the very least, on printed Magic product, start referring to it as generic or mana and not ever refer to the colors with a circle around it as colors mana.
Yeah, 25 years of Magic history is a hard thing to undo, unfortunately.
Yeah, in one sitting. But if you view it that way, it's going to make a lot more sense because you're no longer It's not colorless mana that you need to tap. For example, Ulamog Ceaseless Hunger is 10 generic or mana.
Yeah.
So you don't even have to use the word generic. 10 mana, meaning 10 of any color of mana. Kozilek, the new one, is 8 mana and 2 true color sources. They cannot come from a mountain, an island, a forest, a plains, a swamp. It has to be a land that tapped and it said you gained either a number with a gray circle around it or something with a new color symbol from the newer sets.
Yeah. So it's definitely... It makes things a little bit easier in the grand scheme of things. In the long run, this is a much, much more beneficial thing to it than it is right now.
It opens a big door.
Yeah. And so let's talk about some of that new design space. You know, in the article there was mention of, you know, what happens when you reprint a functional Soul Ring, but it requires a colorless mana to actually cast it and then produces 2 colorless mana. Something like that, broken in the context of Standard. When you look at Soul Ring, it's one of the most powerful cards ever printed in Magic.
Yeah, it would be... So they loved functional reprints. They do functional reprints all the time. And it's a cool thing that they do. Now, like for the example, the Soul Ring is a bit heavy because it would be still too good in like a...
Oh yeah, much too deck. Good.
but yeah, just take any colorless card that you thought was really strong previously... And add in a colorless pip. So, for example, a really powerful deck a while back, Cobblade. Right?
Yeah.
One of the last deck to actually have a card banned in Standard had 2. I don't know the last time there were 2 cards banned in Standard at the same time, if that ever happened. It was before I started playing. So.
It was Ravager Affinity at that point. Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
I started in Zendikar, and that's never banned a card except for those 2 cards. They got banned at the same time. So if you take that deck... One thing that made it really good was Stoneforge Mystic into Sword of Feast and Famine, and then later on the Stoneforge Mystic into Batterskull, because Batterskull is bounceable.
Yep.
Now, if you give the Batterskull 1 generic mana and 2 true colorless manas to bounce it, then it is no longer as powerful.
Yeah, flexibility.
Yeah, or to activate Stoneforge Mystic.
Yeah.
1 true colorless mana and a white mana, because at the time they didn't run much in the way of colorless mana.
Yeah.
The original Zendikar block had a lot of colored mana because it was before all the land got destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Those kinds of cards would not have been as backbreaking of the format. So you can now start sticking true colorless mana onto pretty much anything. You just have to be able to justify it from a flavor aspect.
Yep.
The ability to, one you mentioned earlier, Imuzabajit, would be cool if they did another functional reprint of that card. They'd have to make it a little more expensive, tie in the ability to the creature, but more importantly, taking a step of being able to make it where it has to be colorless mana is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, it just creates an, I would say it doubles the amount of, because you can look at a card with a colorless ability on it, once you stop true colorless mana, you can have potentially a brand new card.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about Thragtusk. For a little bit, you know, 4 and a green, and it's super easy to cast, and it's super oppressive, and it's a double green, double true colorless, and then a generic mana, and all of a sudden your mana constraints in your deck become much, much more difficult to actually cast these cards. So the potential for what Standard Magic looks like going forward, Battle for Zendikar, past Oath of Gatewatch, it's really interesting what we could be seeing a year from now, 2 years from now, if they continue to use this mana.
Yeah, like, it's the same concept of if a card's really strong and it costs 4 generic mana and 2 green, and you make it cost 3 generic mana and 3 green, then that suddenly changes the card's playability.
Yeah.
You're going to see most of this come into play once we leave this Devoid set and we go into normal sets. You'll normally see the colorless mana come into play for colorless things. Like, typically, it's going to be artifacts.
Yeah.
But the ability to say, like, an artifact costs 1 and a true colorless to cast, then it costs 2 true colorless to equip, means that decks are now restricted on the ability to play and equip immediately, so they can make that card really powerful because it's going to be so hard to truly get out.
Yeah, so it's a cool thing to open up design-wise.
Yeah.
You know, we look at a card like Mirror Pool, which is a new land from Battle over the Gatewatch. If you had printed this, let's say... a year ago, and just kept the colorless mana off of it altogether, the card's busted.
Yeah, if it didn't cost a pure colorless, if it was just 3 generic mana and 5 generic mana, that card would be insane.
Yeah.
Of course, they were talking about the one that can copy a spell or copy a creature. Mm-hmm. And that would be too good, but when you throw a generic, like true colorless mana on it, and the fact it taps to activate, it cannot give its own colorless mana to the ability. Now you have to start running multiple true colorless mana sources, which is strong.
Yeah, and it really does kind of go back to the whole artifact creature thing. It fixes a problem that you have with just generic mana. Mm-hmm. Because when you print an artifact creature, let's look at one of the Scourges of Standard right now, Hangerback Walker. It goes in every deck. And you have to print it so that it can go in every deck, so it's not super oppressive. But once you start kind of constraining what it actually costs to cast it, then you have you can make that card even stronger.
Yeah.
Because it only goes in one deck or a couple of decks instead of just going every deck. Let's just start out with four Hangerback Walkers and just 56 other cards.
Yeah.
So if its level up ability to add counters were true colorless mana, and it was still double X, true colorless mana to add counters, that would hurt its playability a lot because some decks don't really have the colorless mana to activate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, it's definitely going to change short-term the way you have to view cards, and it's going to change some standard, but it's just opening so many doors moving forward.
Yeah. A year from now, though, it'll be like if it was never any different.
it's going to make complete sense, and it's not going to be a big deal, but for right now, there's going to be people who love it. There's going to be, same as always, people who just complain about it, and they're going to be grumpy, and they talk about the old days, and it's like, this is not anything different, man. Like, it's the same thing. It's just you're going to, same as it happens now with five colors, where you tap wrong and you can't cast a spell. It's going to happen again with this card, so it's not much different.
Yeah.
But you're going to get people who tap incorrectly, set down a card like you didn't have true colors mana available, mm-hmm. and that happens already as is.
Yep. So it'll be cool. So as positive as the change is, opening up so much new design space, there are some negatives to it. Mm-hmm. And the real kind of one that jumps out to me is that this is Wizards just kind of backdooring their way into a sixth color. You might remember all the way back when Future Sight there was a lot of work being put into a true sixth color. I think it was going to be purple mana. And we were going to see that in Future Sight as sort of, you know, a potential future where a sixth color doesn't exist in Magic. And if it had worked, it would have gone forward and they would have kept using it, but just design issues really held it back. And so it just kind of confuses me as somebody who doesn't play a lot of Standard, Northern Folks Unlimited, why introduce something like this that's such a massive sort of shift design-wise in a small set? Why not show us it in Battle of Zendikar, or dial it back even further and put it in Origins, which was kind of, in a sense, a reboot set for Magic, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It in some ways, I think it's okay. Because Wizards is a big fan of just gaining data points and using that to make future decisions. So this is more data points to, if they ever do decide to go back into the six color argument.
Yeah.
And doing it on a small set, though, like, if you really think about it, because it is such a big change, would you want it to be something that causes, it's like letting your milk sour? Do you want a half gallon or full gallon sour? So if this doesn't work, it's much better to do it on a smaller set. If all of a sudden, and I trust that it's going to work.
Oh, yeah, but absolutely.
Say they tested it, and all of a sudden it comes out, and turns out everybody hates it, right?
Yeah.
Not even just the overdramatic people. Really, you know, calm individuals, people like you and myself who think this has a lot of potential. We play with it for a little bit, we go, the restriction is too high, this isn't usable, you're just causing dead cards and aren't ever getting played.
Yeah.
Now you're only impacting a small set, as opposed to saying Battle for Zendikar now has a bunch of cards that are worth nothing because they end up getting undone. That's not a likelihood, but it makes sense. Plus, the amount of testing time that has to go in to test something this new, you need to do it on a small set. Because
that is
they
true.
Still need to do their regular testing of the other cards. And it's not like Wizards suddenly said, you guys get an extra year to work on the set. They still have their same timetable.
Yeah,
absolutely. So it's the only realistic way for them to test it. So it makes sense 100%. I'd much rather them use this method of slowly working things out than instead of back whenever they did Snapcaster Mana Leak and they introduced Thragtusk, Counter Souls, and all these other cards to try to fix the problem, and they go, well, we tried to fix the problem, we made it worse. Do this small, you know, put your foot in the pool and see how cold it is first.
Yeah, I was about to say, you know, I'm much more a fan of, if you're going to fail spectacularly.
Oh, no.
But then you mentioned the exact problem.
Yeah, then you go to tournaments and you're dealing with that failure and you don't enjoy that.
And then every deck starts out with four Jace of the Mind Sculptor, four Stoneforge Mystic, one Batterskull, one Sword of Feast and Famine, and
you failing. So,
failing in small steps.
The game has learned that failing spectacularly is not something you want to do. Like you really want to limit the failing spectacularly option.
It makes for better conversations, though, when they fail spectacularly.
It makes for good retrospective anger. It makes for very terrible like tournament happiness. Like,
yeah. So that is definitely a fair point to make.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I've always kind of felt, especially when it comes to Battle for Zendikar and this lock in general, and Saffron Olive really mirrored my thoughts and put them into words that I couldn't quite elaborate on, is that as a whole, it's a design mess. And it's kind of harsh, so let me explain myself here. So Battle for Zendikar has multicolored colorless cards and your Devoid cards. It also has non-generic colorless cards now, with things like Kozilek like the Great Distortion, which is a colorless and a true colorless card. And then you have actual colorless cards, and you put this all in front of a brand new player and just say, okay, go. And they look at it and they're like, well, what the hell is this? This card is gold, but it's devoid and has no color. And just, again, it goes back to like the complexity, which is good for the game, but it just, you look at it and it's hard to just to really kind of make sense of, you know, what they were thinking in an abstract kind of view.
It's hard to teach new players, because part of the beauty of it before was, all right, I need to cast this lightning bolt. So yeah. I need a mana that has a color that matches the color on the top of this card. Very simple. But now you have a card that says, I need a gray symbol. And so you look down and you go, do I have a gray symbol? Cool. But it's, now you're going to be confused because there's two forms of gray symbols. And that is a big design issue, but that's something that they're having to work with the hand they're dealt. That's been around for so long. Like, there's no other options. Like I said before, you can't suddenly give color to generic mana and give a rainbow wheel in the back to show that it can be any color, because that would bleed and make it so hard to print. It'd be unfeasible to print. So the news, and then you didn't want to give the true colorless mana a color, because then that's just dumb.
Yeah.
So it is really awkward. It's unfortunate that they were painted in that corner, but it is something that's gonna make it harder to explain to players that, especially with the errata and older cards.
And I think if they can make it work in this set, they can make it work in any set. Because you have a card like Brood Butcher, which is 3BG, yet it's devoid and has no color, and so a player trying to explain to another new player saying, well, it needs colored mana to cast it, but it doesn't actually have a color itself.
Right.
So, like, the concept of Devoid was very, very cool in the beginning, but it kind of creates this really awkward situation of, how do you explain what a Devoid card is?
Yeah, so, and the problem, I think the best way to explain those, and it's not so bad, I think Devoid's not too big of a problem, is you just need to show whoever you're explaining it to a card that cares about color. So you take this Brood Butcher that is three colors, green and a black, and it's Devoid, and you say, you see this card? Celestial Purge does not exile it.
Yeah.
Because it says black, this says Devoid, can't overrules can, we're done.
Yeah.
So the hard part with Devoid is showing that cards care, because in that set, not many cards cared about color anyway. There are cards that cared about colorless, but not cards that cared about color.
Right.
So it's a different angle to look at it.
Yeah.
The new true colors mana symbol is going to be the big kicker because of older cards, especially with this new set. Like the example you used earlier was Kozilek's Chandler. Like, that's going to be a real conflicting view to have, is like, why doesn't, you're going to get players who don't read and they don't really listen whenever the judge introduces pre-release, and they're not tuning into this amazing podcast, and they're going to say, why doesn't my Kozilek's Chandler cast Kozilek? And then we can look at them and say, you idiot. Listen to the podcast.
Listen to episode 19.
Yeah. You need to tune in here, buddy. We can't hold your spoon for you and let you eat. So, like, it is one of those things where it's going to be weird with the two sets overlapping.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's one of those things where after a week or two, with the exception of very casual players or teaching a new player, it's not going to be so bad. And honestly, a new player will get it because you're teaching them from that perspective.
Yeah, they have nothing else to base it on. Yeah.
The person who's in the most hell is the person who started playing at Battle for Zendikar. That person's life is terrible. Because they have the least experience to go off of, and they're suddenly trying to, like, now learn that there's a change in the game. Like, I just got the game. Yeah. Everything's a change. What is this now? But if you teach a player starting from Oath, then you can teach them with that understanding.
Yeah.
If you teach a player from earlier, you can say, don't worry, Wizards sometimes paints themselves in corners. And this is them clumsily tripping out of the corner.
Yes.
So it's fine. But It's going to be that that player who learned, like, a month ago at the end of Battle for Zendikar that goes, like, I bought an intro packet at the store and it has this Kozilek Chandler. And they're going to see this new Kozilek and go, what? This Kozilek Chandler doesn't cast Kozilek? This is so weird. Wizards is dumb. I should go work for them. And they shouldn't. But it's just... It's going to be one of those things that they just run into every time.
I find it really funny when these big paradigm shifts happen and seasoned Magic players look at it and it makes sense. Like, we called this is how this would work a month ago when we first started seeing these waste cards, and we understand it, and it's so funny that we can joke about it, because I don't want to, like, paint people who don't get it into, like, a bad light. But it's just kind of a funny thing to think about, that it's something so obvious to some people is the most obscure thing in the world. And it really kind of shows you just the diversity of Magic players in general.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is, how cynical are you? Like, yeah. I have some very cynical Magic friends, and they understood it right away. Because you sit there and you go, I'm not going to waste my time thinking too much.
Yeah.
The people who are going to struggle with this are the people who overthink it. Don't overthink it.
Yeah.
If an old card taps for... A little black circle with a number in the middle that's all gray, that is true colorless mana.
Yep.
If it doesn't, it's not true colorless mana. That's it.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
Simple as
but
that.
But you're going to get people overthink it, and they're going to confuse themselves. The one thing I am waiting to hear is if they, like we talked about earlier, if they fix City of Brass and Mana Confluence.
Sure.
Because the purpose of those cards are to pay life to make sure your mana is perfect, and now they technically don't, because there's a six color they don't produce, which is ironic because it's the most basic color in all the game. So
it is the absence of color.
The card that deals damage to you for life actually doesn't fix you anymore. Like, deals damage to fix things, doesn't fix it.
So how do you print a land that says produces any one of five colors and colorless mana? How do you
print? You say, tap this mana land, pay one life, produce one mana of any form, and so the form would now include five colors and colorless,
right?
Because you can't say one mana of any color; colorless is not colored. So you'd have to errata it to say, tap City of Brass, you lose one life, add one mana of any form, and that would cover the colors aspect.
Yeah, or any one non. And they would have to keyword generic. Or whatever they're going to call true generic mana.
They don't have to keyword that. Because if you think about it, if you tapped Mana Confluence, you could still use that to pay for a generic color.
Well, you could,
So it's one mana of any form will go towards generic mana, or that colored, or that colorless.
Okay, I see where you're going with that.
Basically taps for anything. So you just start rewording cards to use the word form whenever they tap for any color.
Yeah.
As opposed to
that any makes color. Sense. I can definitely see that going there. And of course, we mentioned that errata. I want to touch on this briefly because the number is actually absurd. So somebody over on, I don't even know what the site is actually. this was linked in the article, and it's all of the cards that have to be errated. In all of Magic's history, there are 312 cards that have to be changed, you know, if they're ever printed again, to show that they now produce colorless mana. So something like Mana Vault, which taps to add three generic mana currently, now taps to produce three true colorless mana, but it untaps with an ability that takes four generic mana. So you have these kind of weird combinations of both true colorless and true generic mana on the same card.
Yeah. Wait, is that Mana Vault?
I didn't want to use the Basalt Monolith example again, so I found another card that does the exact same thing.
That's fair.
Which is far more powerful, because I think Mana Vault is a one drop?
Yeah, it's a one drop. I mean, and another point, this is a little bit of a go backwards, but for future printing, is now cards like Sol Ring, for example.
Yeah.
If you want to cast it, say it costs one true colors mana, but then it only produces generic mana. Like, if they start that would probably get too messy.
Yeah.
But eventually they could get to the point where they start reintroducing generic mana and say that restricts the ability to cast your color spells. I don't know if they will, because they're just about to fix all of the colorless mana.
Yeah.
That now would get really confusing. But it's a door that if they figure out a way to do it in a way that uses a new symbol, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's just to kind of look at the list of cards that it actually, because it hits every Eld of Pain lands. It hits. The list is just absurd. I mean, let's see. I think I saw Dismember on there too. Why would Dismember be on here?
Because it. Wait, no. Dismember shouldn't be on there.
Nope, I can't read actually.
Okay. I would say that this movement has nothing changed.
But yeah, it's a lot of lands. It's a lot of creatures that produce colorless mana. So if like a generator servant, I think, would be one that gets changed. It's a big mess that I would love to see them actually fix. And the funniest bit about it is, if you had to guess, what would be the set that got hit the most by these erratas?
Right.
And Sean already knows the answer to this question, because I already told it to him.
I wouldn't have guessed it.
But it's Balfour's Endicard.
Yeah.
With 10% of the cards in that set being changed, and a lot of them just have to do with the fact that all the cards that generate Scions now have their text changed to producing this true waste mana, not generic colorless mana. So,
which as
we'll that see, is the question, why didn't they just do this to begin with in Balfour's Endicard?
Well, so I was thinking about that. That's why I said earlier, but the more I think about it is, if you just suddenly changed the symbol, no card used the new symbol, everybody would say, like, Rosewater's drunk.
No, so it's, that'd be okay. That would be fine, because people would be like, what's going on?
There'd be so many bitter Magic players, but like, get off the yard. You're changing things that don't need change.
Well, it would be like when Tarmogoyf got printed and it revealed Planeswalkers, and people were like, what is a Planeswalker? Or yes, when Iavuga was printed and it was talking about Eldrazi, there were no Eldrazi until Rise of Eldrazi was printed.
Yeah, I remember that card being like, why do we want this?
Yeah, so, foreshadowing. I like foreshadowing.
But yeah, but those are more blatant foreshadows, because those are like terms. This is just a change of a symbol, and you're like, it'd be similar to you taking the water droplet for the blue mana and just move where the little like glimmer symbol is over to the other side, and people going like, oh, what does that mean? Like, you wouldn't.
It might look good on that side though.
Maybe, I don't know. I think it'd be, they would have raised so many questions.
But just like the ultimate tease, and they could have just said, hey guys, you know what? We're just changing what it looks like on cards, because none of the cards, you know. And they could have alluded to what was coming, and people would have, you know, kind of figured it out, and then the Gatewatch would have been spoiled, and then everybody freaks out. Why don't they hire us for marketing, Sean?
Well, they'd probably hire us to take care of their inbox about all the questions they're getting about it, no matter how many times they address it.
I see a quick control A, delete all.
Yeah, they would be. If they would have just changed it, not shown an example of a card, they would have gotten blown up. It would have been insane.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the impact is only going to be... at the end of the day, like, you, even if you're not positive, you understand how it's going to work. Someone's going to cast something against you, and you'll understand then. Yeah. But it's going to have still overall not the hugest impact.
Yeah.
Just... If you don't fully understand it, and you're a visual person at your pre-release or at your release weekend, just... have somebody who seems like they know what they're doing. Find somebody who looks...
Find one of us.
If you're in DFW, find one of us. Or if you're not, find the least happy-looking person, and they probably go to a lot of tournaments. And that person will be able to tell you how this works. They're going to get angry at you for talking to them, because they don't play this for social aspects, but no, they can explain it. But, I mean, that's really... I mean, at the end of the day,
I would love to see what other areas of the country or the states, what their version of the squad looks like. If you guys are listening, yeah, I'm talking to you.
I've traveled all around the states. They all look very similar, and I at times don't like interacting with our squad because they scare me. But
they want to be on the show. Actually, that just seems like a bad idea.
No, though. It depends on which ones you bring on. Hal Brady's a good-hearted guy.
Oh yeah, what'd you get them to talk about though? That's what I can't figure out.
I think you can bring the Hals and the Dustins and the Mike Straczynskis. And then Drew Iferati's, just make sure you have food for him so he's happy, because he'll quickly turn on everyone. If you can get a podcast with him about Constructed, that's your best bet. They make everybody else in DFW look pedestrian, in my opinion.
All right, well, there you go.
There's nothing I hate more than giving those guys credit. But
that is the formal invitation for the squad to come on and be on the show. Yeah. And
I think Hal Brady liked the podcast just earlier today.
I think he did too.
Yeah, that was good.
Hey, Hal, how you doing?
I think that's when I liked it, because I was like, I haven't actually done that yet.
So yeah, coming soon, guys. That's going to be exciting.
The squad endorsed it, so I was like, well, I guess I got to like this podcast. So yeah,
you can go on the T-shirt, squad endorsed on the back of them.
That's a good thing to go with.
I'm going
to
write that one down. Get a banner. Yeah. Okay. Make a notes here real quick.
It'll be a real big coffee case. We need one of them to like win a pro tour so that people know what we're talking about.
That's true.
Otherwise, it's going to be real confusing.
Step your game up, guys. Step your game up. All right, so we're going to switch gears to something that can that's kind of negative and, you know, harping on colorless mana. And we're going to talk about the one thing that I think all Magic players love.
Before we move on, I just want to make one quick point about colorless mana. I said this before we started recording. I think it's going to be interesting to see if enough good colors cards get printed, because right now we don't have very many.
Yes.
Whether or not... So before Battle for Zendikar came out, as all the spoilers came out, people looked at decks and said, which decks run 8 fetch lands? And that was a big direction to go.
Yeah,
Because of Delve, and because they fixed the mana with the Battle Lands so well, or the Tangle Lands, or whatever you want to call them. But the new direction to go is if your deck is running multiple colorless creatures, you're actually looking for shells that run as many pain lands as possible, such as the Yavimaya Coasts, Land of War Waste, Shivan Reefs, which is going to be really interesting because you have sub decks right now that run, like Dark Jeskai runs 0 true colorless mana in most of their lists.
Yeah.
Abzan runs 0 to 1 or 2 true colorless mana on most of their lists. So if they want to fit a couple of these cards in, they're going to have to really warp their mana bases and start re-adding Shivan Reefs and Caves of Koilos and Land of War Waste. But I think it's going to be interesting to see if that makes very big of an impact. It's all going to come down to how powerful these cards are. But if they are powerful enough, which a few of them I really like, then it might actually make a big impact.
I think the one thing that we will see is that we're going to get some cards that are just obviously powerful, but just not within the context of Standard right now. Mm-hmm. And so that once things rotate out and everything kind of shifts, we're going to see a massive overhaul in what Standard looks like. And that happens every time.
It's important to remember that when Delve leaves, that's going to really change things because cheaply costed spells really warp formats.
Yeah.
So whenever you have spells with huge effects, like a Murderous Cut even, that is 1 or 2 mana, that really is very different. If you've ever played Doomblade and then you've delved Murderous Cut for 1, Doomblade is amazing. You delve Murderous Cut to be 1 mana, and you're like, well, this is... I can get used to this.
Better, yeah.
But it's about you're about to not be able to get used to that. Yeah. So, like, once those cards are gone, these more expensive spells, these more, like, restrictive spells, your triple color mana start fading away. So when that stuff rotates out, it's going to really change stuff, because you're going to have a triple color block leaving, and if they don't bring in a new triple color block, you can afford these color spells more efficiently.
It'll be interesting to see where things go, because there's some cool ones, and so... We're going to talk about some of those cool ones now. So, like I said, this is Magic Player Heaven, because it gives us stuff to talk about. That's easy to talk about, and spoilers are fun.
Yeah, so we'll talk spoilers a little bit. Now, you're going to want to tune into the actual spoiler episode, where we'll break down limited validity of cards, and we're going to try to figure out a way to include some constructed validity of cards. This is going to be us... I would say we'll probably discuss each card in either a coffin or in its best scenario, which in most cards cases is limited.
Yeah.
But you'll get actual true rankings and things like that on the actual spoiler episode. So there's that.
So it'll be cool. Yeah. And so I think today all 5 Intrapec rares got spoiled.
Yep.
One of them is hiding on the thick spoiler right now. There's a broken link. But there's some cool stuff here. So we're going to touch on...
As always, the blue's the best one.
The blue's the best one, yeah. And there are not a whole lot of them, so we can touch on all of them, you know. Pretty quickly here. So let's kind of... So we talked about Well of Mythics last week. And so the one that jumped out to me really quickly when I saw it is Mimico Eldrazi, which is Eldrazi Mimic. The Spanish version got spoiled this morning. And it's a 2-mana, 2-1. And that's 2 generic mana. Not colorless mana, but generic mana. And it's 2-1 Eldrazi. And then whenever another colorless creature enters the battlefield under your control... You may have the base power and toughness of Eldrazi Mimic become that creature's power and toughness until the end of turn. I think that's just super sweet.
I'm a little disappointed because when I first read it, I didn't read the phrase whenever another colorless creature enters. I read another creature. and I thought it was pretty good at that level. Mostly limited. But if you're playing a deck that has multiple creatures and now it has to be multiple colorless creatures, it's kind of like you're giving them quasi-haste. If you're running cards... For sheer power level. If you're running synergistic cards, for example, this guy into Mantis Rider, that's not the best. but this guy into like a relatively fat creature who has no other abilities other than the fact that he's fat is pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Such as like this guy, and then you delve out a Gurmag angle would have been cool. But since it's colorless, it's a lot more restricted. Like you're running this guy into Devoy creatures.
Yeah. I just want to play like 4 of these in a deck and then slam Kozilek's Channeler and just, you know, jam in for 16 points power. I mean, it's cool what it does in just like these really short bursts. And it kind of sucks that it's still the end of turn.
Yeah.
But at that point, it just grows over the course of the game. It becomes a 3-2 and a 5-5, and then a 10-10. It gets a little out of control.
I feel like he was if they would have less aggressively cost, he's two colors, and he's a 2-1 by nature. They made him like 3 as like a 2-3. Then they could have made him an uncommon. Yeah. I'm a little disappointed that he's at a rare level because I don't want to open up on a bunch of him.
That is true. Yeah, he's a little underwhelming.
Yeah, especially because at your limited events and your drafts, you're not opening tons of colorless creatures. That being said, he's not the worst. He's just not a 2-drop 2-1's never bad. You just don't want to get your 2-drop 2-1's as your rares.
Yeah.
But he goes in literally every deck. So if you sometimes you draft an amazing deck, but you don't have enough low drops, and even if you don't have a lot of colorless creatures, you sheerly play this guy, as we learned from the cons block, just to trade with other creatures so you can live.
Oh yeah.
So you might not even get his ability very often, but you just need a guy who, if your mana's struggling or if you don't have a good early game, this guy will come in early and trade with something.
Yeah.
So that's fine.
Yeah, definitely a pretty sweet card here.
Unfortunately, Silence trade with him if he didn't get pumped.
Yeah, that's kind of awkward too. Yeah. So, I mean, he's not terribly large, it doesn't look. From a purely art perspective.
No, he looks just kind of like somebody, like a really like a disgusting bulldog.
Yeah,
like
a
little British bulldog that's awful and slobbers everywhere.
Although I'm kind of amused by the fact that, you know, if I could say you get like Kozilek's Channel out there, which is, I imagine, a pretty big creature. This thing grows about that big, and then Kozilek comes down and it grows really big.
Yeah.
There's some humor there that I'm not purveying very
This is
well.
Where being a paper game isn't as cool as if it was a digital game, because you could have all these cool little cute art, but I don't get that anymore.
We do what we can. Yeah. We do what we can. All right, so our next card this thing's pretty brutal looking.
This is a real card.
Because I love the fact that it harkens back to one of my favorite cards of our printed Staff of Nen. Is the Endbringer. And I like the way this card is templated because of all of the colorless mana cost in it. So it's a 5-5 for 5 and a true colorless, so the diamond mana. And it untaps during each other player's untap step, which is already pretty bonkers. You can tap it to deal a damage to a target creature or player. You can tap a colorless mana and it. Target creature can't attack or block this turn. Or you tap two true colorless mana and it, and you draw a card. Mm. This thing's absurd.
This card is a house. I think this card's amazing.
Yeah, the right deck.
Yeah, because of the variety of abilities it has. So if you think about it, if you are behind, this guy comes into play, probably eats something in blocking.
Yeah.
So you're talking limited. Then you get to untap, and if you're ahead, you get to rumble for 5. If you have another big creature and the board's stalled, you now get to start forcing creatures through while still maintaining this 5-5 as a blocker because he untaps on their untap step.
Yep.
That was the big thing, is normally whenever you can force through damage, you've lost that card.
Yep.
So you've tapped 2 cards to force through damage, and now you have 2 less blockers. But now you get 1 blocker back. So say you have a 4-power creature, you push the 4-power creature through, untap, and you still have your 5-5. And then on their turn, you can ping one of their guys. You can draw a card if the board is at parity. So in a parity board, you're pushing damage through and drawing cards or pinging creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's still untapping for your turn. Like, he's constantly untapped every turn. The card is probably... In a limited aspect, this card is one of the biggest bombs. Because he can go in any deck that can produce colorless mana. There's maybe enough colorless sources to run him.
And even without having the double colorless to actually tap to draw the cards and make the creatures unblockable and whatnot, this is still just good.
Yeah.
If you can just produce one time colorless mana. Oh, it has the actual... Oh, that's much easier to read now.
The only drawback is that he's not like a 7-drop 6-6 for constructed aspects. Because you have a number of cards that care about 7. Such as we talked about in a previous week, Kozilek's Return. This would not trigger Kozilek's
That's
Return.
True, yeah.
Because it would kill it. So you don't mind it not triggering Kozilek's Return. But he's still just... I think he's... very possibly constructed playable. Just because he's like a planeswalker of a creature. So he's an easily killable planeswalker.
Yeah.
Because he kills things, he deals damage, he draws you cards. So he helps when you're behind, helps when you're ahead, and helps when you're at parity. And does all three of those things very well.
Yeah.
He can trade for a 6 toughness creature where you block and then ping it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a ton of amazing abilities to this card. I think this card's going to be... If you open this as your rare for your pre-release, you're going to be... extremely happy.
Yeah. Slam pick first in draft, I think.
Yeah, first draft pick. Oh, definitely, because he's colorless mana. So
yeah.
you, So anytime you can first pick a colorless bomb, the colorless bombs have never really been printed very much, with the exception of like a batter skull.
And
like
Wormcoal Engine.
And Wormcoal Engine, yeah. And then way back in the Mirrodin block, colorless bombs were rare.
Yeah.
This is a colorless bomb. In a draft, you take this and you are still open for whatever the table wants you to do, because you will easily be able to splash this guy. Even if you rarely have the ability to draw the card,
yeah,
every other aspect's fine. If you can cast him, you can do two of his abilities. The third ability, you just need one more colorless mana.
Yeah.
So I think he's unbelievable.
Yeah. And I think this is a really good example of, because like you could easily take Inbringer and swap every instance of the color of the colorless symbol to like blue, and this becomes a very good blue card.
Yeah.
But by changing, by if they had made this just completely colorless, this becomes just absolutely retarded and powerful. But in this context, with colorless mana being the restriction on it, it makes it much, much more...
Yeah. If this guy was four generic and a blue and a red, he's a very blue-red card.
Yeah.
But it's a perfect example, like you said, that this is they're showing what we can do now that we've added this restriction,
yeah.
Which is if this card was six generic mana of any form... One generic mana of any form to give unblockable, two generic four mana of any form to draw a card, this card would be insane.
Yeah.
At this level, it's still unbelievably good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it shows that you take it from being unprintable to printable, and people are still happy.
Yeah, definitely. And the art's just cool, too.
Yeah, art's pretty
cool. Although, I kind of wish they had just called it The Endbringer and make it legendary or whatever. Because like, Endbringer sounds something just like sounds legendary and sounds cool.
I just find single word imposing words really impressive.
That's
so
fair.
Endbringer is the you don't have time to say the word the because you're about to get wrecked. So it's just Endbringer. Because this guy, unless you're already about to kill your opponent, if you're both at 12, you both have a board of 3/3/3s, so you're staring at each other with just kind of sitting there, and your opponent drops this. You can't help but just kind of go like, oh, man, like this is the worst. Like, I need a really good kill spell so we can go back. You're hoping to get back to parity if somebody plays this against you. Like, you're begging for a way to get back to even.
But this thing is breaks parity and runs away the game.
Unless you give it vigilance, which don't be too cute. Don't go over the top. But if you do give it vigilance by some passing manner, giving himself unblockable school.
Yeah.
Don't be the... If you want to play at a Kitchens, that's fine. But don't waste your time trying to give this dude vigilance. He's good enough. You don't need to give him vigilance.
Super...
Just to make him unblockable.
Super cool.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to another card now.
Another awesome.
Yeah, another awesome one. I think this was one of the intro pack cards, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
This is Deep Fathom Skulker. This is 5 and a blue for a Devoid Eldrazi. 4/4. Whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you may draw a card. And then for 3 and a colorless mana, true colorless, target creature can't be blocked this turn. So it is Biden of Thassa, Thassa God of the Sea on a big old body.
Yeah.
Again, it's actually worse than Thassa.
Yeah, it's not a 5/5.
And it doesn't drop for 3 mana.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's okay.
As a normal blue player, I'm sad it's not a 4/5 so it can interact with Siege Rhinos. Profitably, like it survives. but I mean, the ability is so good that you had to limit it in some way.
Yeah.
The ability, as we've seen before, is very good. Especially with this recent Origin set that has all these Thopters.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can have Scions out and like Sky Spawners. Like, this guy is going to get you some card advantage. As with the Inbringer, the ability to give unblockable is good. His is more expensive, but he can give himself unblockable.
Yeah.
So he's one of those things where you've had a knockdown, drag-out fight. Both of you, you know, you played all your creatures, they played all their creatures. Nobody has any cards in hand, and they rip a top deck board wipe, and so nobody has anything.
Yeah.
You top deck this guy, and they can't get blockers, because you're just going to push through 4 and draw a card, 4 and draw a card.
Yeah.
And it's really good.
And I like the fact that it doesn't give you a restriction on what kind of creature. I'm remembering cards that said it had to be whenever another elf or another goblin
does
something to it. I like that it doesn't restrict you
this
on that.
This is a true Biden. And that's
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
But Biden on a stick for a little bit more mana.
Yeah. This card's absurd.
Yeah.
Unlimited, not the first pick. Awesome card. Let's see. What do we have next? We have the Dread Defiler.
Less awesome.
Less awesome, but still kind of... I don't know. The ability on this thing is pretty absurd. So it's 6 and a black for a 6/8 Eldrazi Devoid creature. 3 and a true colorless. You can exile a creature card from your graveyard, and target opponent loses life equal to the exiled card's power.
So
this is absurd.
Yeah, he's He's 7 mana and he triggers your 7 mana abilities.
Yeah.
As a body with nothing going on in the graveyard, he is just a 6/8, which is good, but 7 mana is a lot for a 6-powered guy. The problem I have with his secondary ability is, if you remember in Battle for Zendikar, there was a ton of green-black sac decks people were trying to run, and they just weren't very good most of the time. There's not a very good sac deck currently, and there's not very much graveyard filling. So this guy is only going to get fodder off the regular attrition of a game. So after game one, whenever you see your opponent playing, there's a lot of exile effects. So like, there's going to be a lot of times where his secondary ability, the 4 mana, is not really going to be worth it, or you're not going to have very good targets because you've gotten horribly awry'd and you've gotten the black one that exiles a land and a creature?
Grip of Desolation.
Yeah, Grip of Desolation. Like, you're going to have all these exile effects that don't give him good fodder. So I'm not positive how strong he'll be in the current situation. That's why I'm not a big fan of him.
I think just in limited applications, the normal attrition, like you mentioned, you're gonna be able to get to a point where if you're at parity, you can't force through damage anymore, but you've got enough creatures, you get to a point in the game where you just said, all right, I'm going to start turning creatures sideways. You better block these, or you're going to die, but if you block them, the Dread Defiler is going to start exiling out of my graveyard and is going to start shooting you for a lot of damage.
But you have to be in a really advantageous position for that to work, because he has 4 to activate.
Yeah.
So I think for him, he's going to be a very play-intensive card. For me, the way I play, especially in limited competitively, I can't tell you the last time I've been in a situation where I've had a board stall. I don't play into board stalls very well.
Yeah, neither do I.
I almost never am in a situation where I'm staring down 5 creatures to 5 creatures. I have hedged things in some way, and it's not necessarily like I'm not an amazing player, but I've hedged things in a way where I never run into board stalls. So for this card, he would not go well with my system.
Because
run into situations where that's an option very often.
I can see that.
But for some players who every time I look over, they've got 8 creatures, sometimes they're too cautious. Sometimes the decks they build are I'm normally too light on creatures and they're too heavy on creatures. Mm-hmm. And so they're just playing things they can't get through because their deck ran 20 creatures.
Yeah.
This card's way better for their style. For me, it's not going to be a card I will traditionally run. That being said... If he's a rare, if I end up, there's not a good card, I'll take him. But normally in a draft, I'll take more removal spells than this guy.
Yeah.
And sealed, obviously, if I get him and I'm in black, he'll be in the deck.
Probably. Yeah, I can definitely say. But maybe not probably a first pick in draft, but probably not, you know, if it gets passed to me, I'm going to really have to evaluate the rest of my deck as a whole.
He'll be first pick over most cards just because he does have a relevant ability, but I would say any decent removal spell trumps this card. In my play style, I would rather run a good removal spell.
Especially at 7 mana. That's a big investment to put on something like that. So, we'll save an actual rating for this thing when it goes to that point.
Right.
All right. And the next one we've got...
Didn't have the picture.
I think we are missing one of the intro pack rares.
No, it's... Oh, the white one's farther down.
Oh, that's right. Okay, that's right. It's an ally. Okay.
Yeah. And the green one's farther down.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so we're cool. All right, so the next one we've got, this is the Tyrant of Valakut. Creature Dragon, 5 red for a 5/4, and it has flying, as all good dragons do. And it has the new Surge ability, which we kind of talked about. We'll talk about Surge for a minute, Sean. What does Surge actually do?
So Surge says anytime, and because Two-Headed Giant is a very important part of the set, according to Wizards.
Yeah, but not on Modo, awkwardly enough.
It doesn't currently exist. But I'm sure they'll fix that. That's going to be their grand... It's kind of like whenever you go to the store and the item that you know is only $5, they put a marked out sign of $10 above it and then sell it for $5 to make it seem cool. That's what they're doing with it. But Surge is... They took it away, Two-Headed Giant. They're going to bring it back and they're going to say, look how beautiful that is. And it was there before. So Surge is if any time you or a teammate has already played a spell this turn, you get an alternate cost and sometimes an alternate effect out of it.
Yeah.
Normally the alternate cost is, and all the cards I've seen so far, typically cheaper than the traditional cost, and the effect is normally restrictive on whether or not you paid it for its surge. So normally the card, if you don't have surge triggered, you are incredibly depressed to play the card. If you do have surge triggered, you are extremely giddy to play the card.
Because this thing is, it's a 7 mana card. It's 5 red red.
So let's just look on it without the surge aspect. Yeah. 5 red red flying 5/4. I would not draft this card.
Not even
I would
close.
Not run this card. I would throw this card as far as I could.
Yeah.
Then the new effect.
Yeah. Surge is 3 red red. So it becomes 5 mana. And when it enters the battlefield, if you hit its surge cost, it deals 3 damage to a target creature or a player. I can rush a vice. I can risk constricting coils or some cheap removal spell,
yeah,
and then bolt something else.
Yeah,
this thing becomes absolutely absurd to knock off 2 mana off of a 7 mana cost spell. This thing's beastly. I think
the disappointment in it is, unless you're playing 2-headed giant, he's still a 7-drop or more.
Because yeah,
most
true.
Spells you run in your deck are 2 mana and up.
Yeah.
So, and that it is going to take you as a player. If this is a, if you're running cards with Surge in your deck, and you have a 2-drop Grizzly Bear in your hand, if the Grizzly Bear is worthless in your limited game, you know that if you play it, it's going to chump block and die, or it's going to die when it attacks.
Yep.
So you don't play it, and you have to save that card knowing you need it for the Surge aspect later. And that's going to take knowing your deck.
Yeah.
But the Surge, he is still quasi 7 mana. Yeah. But the ability to bolt something is good. It's just, he's still a really sad body. Like, make him a 5-5. He doesn't have haste. Like, there's nothing else impressive. Like,
yeah,
make him a 5-5 and let him bolt something, and that's still fine. The 5-4 with the bolt aspect, if he was haste, it'd be insane.
Oh, you go like nuts. Yeah.
3 your opponent, 5 your opponent. And that's a huge turn. But because he doesn't have haste, you're normally going to be, I would say 90% of the time, surging him to kill one of their creatures and then have a body
set back. Now, I'm gonna. This is completely off the cuff here. Would you play card? So we've seen Surge. At what threshold would you say a card like this, if the Surge was actually more than the regular casting cost, but the effect scaled up with it? What if this wasn't bolt one creature a player? This is 3 to everything. They've, on their side of the board.
They've done that in the sense of kickers.
When we're talking kickers here, So it's too much like kicker then in some ways.
This is the opposite of kicker. So a flavor aspect was when Zendikar first came out, kicker was, guys, we need to get up and get started. So it's kind of kicking them in the butt, getting them ready to roll.
Sure.
On this aspect is, guys, we need to throw everything we have because we're running out of time. And so you're surging to the battle lines to try to survive. So a flavor aspect, this is the right direction to go with kicker, is instead scaling instead of scaling it up.
Okay.
It's just that it does, you need to keep in your head, yes, a card, if you get 8 surge cards, keep in mind those 8 surge cards either need cheap cards to trigger them, such as our 2-color sky that we talked about earlier.
Yep.
Maybe if your deck can't trigger him off and he's still a 2-drop, or you are going to be hard casting these cards for very poor value. So if your curve is really bad, you're going to struggle with these surge cards if you're playing solo Magic.
Yeah, and a lot of the surge cards we've seen so far, the upside's very, very good. There's Crush of Tentacles, there's the Dragon, there's a couple more we're going to touch on. So you will want to cast these for their surge costs, I think.
I mean, I'm excited to see a 2-headed giant where your opponent is running aggro and you're running surge. And so it's basically, in theory, you are a splice combo. So they play a spell and you splice something onto it. They play a spell and you splice something onto it. So you're constantly splicing and boosting your opponent.
Yeah,
I think is a very viable aspect. If their deck is mostly cheap, so they're going to consistently have cheap spells, and your deck is mostly survival and surge, that's fine. It's just, if I don't traditionally play 2-headed giant, I might for this one for the first time ever, but normally I'm playing individual, like GPs, one person versus one person. So these surge cards aren't as high on my radar in limited as they might be for someone else, because I don't like having that big restriction on myself.
I can see that, definitely sure. So our next card, it's our first non-rare, it's our first common, and this is the Scion Summoner. This is a 2 and a green Eldrazi Drone, Devoid, 2-2, and when it enters the battlefield, you get the Scion, and of course the Scion's been errated, so it says it adds a colorless, the true colorless mana symbol to your mana pool when you sacrifice it. Pretty bread and butter. It's like Eldrazi Sky Spawner, Ness Invader.
No, it's nowhere near Eldrazi Sky Spawner. Sky Spawner is a house.
That card is the best card in Limited.
Best
common in Limited in Battle of the Card Draft.
This card is 3 power for 3 mana. It's fine. It ramps you. That's fine. It's not something you're excited about. You'll early pick Sky Spawner. You will not early pick this card unless it's pack 3 and you know you need low-costed ramp creatures. You're running a deck with big Eldrazi at the end. You need some ramp dudes. This guy is okay because he will occasionally trade with somebody without losing your spawn.
Yeah,
but he's he's nothing to clap for. You're not going to look down the table and talk trash to everybody and say, yeah, I got this Scion Summoner. Everybody get ready to rumble. You don't care.
I just like the person's comment here. Heart says that green was a good color in Battle for Zendikar draft. Don't know why people complain about it. Have you drafted Battle for Zendikar green yet?
No, I don't often draft green. And the only reason I would draft green is for fat creatures and ramp, which now every color has in Battle for Zendikar.
Yeah.
So why do I go green? Like, I don't like to waste my time.
I would rather go anything but green.
I'll draft a sweet blue-black deck that has Scions.
Yep.
And then I'll play my fat colorless Eldrazi, and I'm playing a green deck that has better spells.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no reason to worry about
it. So, not very interesting.
No. That guy is whatever.
He's bread and butter. He's your commons, but he's whatever. All right. Time for something a little bit more interesting here. So this was spoiled as one of the... This is a participation promo for game day.
And we'll see more play than the top 8.
Yes, exactly. And this is Immolating Glare. This is 1W instant to destroy target attacking creature.
This card's insane.
Card's awesome.
It's not Celestial Fair. They don't sacrifice. You choose it and it goes away.
Yes.
In Constructed, you rarely are caring about their blockers. Mm-hmm. You're not going to see people Celestial Flaring blockers very often. A lot of times in Constructed, that card is there to remove when you're under, as a control deck, whenever you're under pressure.
Yeah.
So this does the half you want. It is a generic mana and a white, so it is not as restrictive as Celestial Flare.
Yep.
And more importantly, they cannot protect themselves. So they can't just say, I'm going to attack with a Scion and this 8-8, and that way the Scion gets sacked. Now it's, I'm going to attack with a Scion and this 8-8, and the 8-8 is still the thing dying. Like, it's really good.
Yeah.
I think it's a very good... similar to the Gideon one from Origins, that destroy like a tap creature, and see if you had Spell Mastery.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually probably just better,
because
there's not much vigilance. Yeah. So this card's really good.
Yeah, this is comparable to Gideon's Approach from Battle for Zendikar. Destroy target creature blocking or attacking gets still 4 damage. This is just a strict upgrade to that, minus the blocking part. But this card is awesome.
This does not have... There's not a ton of attacking triggers in Standard.
That is also
true. The fact that this kills Mantis Rider and Siege Rhino, two of the biggest villains in the format, means that it doesn't matter, because those guys don't trigger when they attack anyway. The only guy who really has a relevant attacking trigger that I can think of is Anafinza, and somebody gets a 1-1 counter.
Yep.
And that's fine, because it's a 2-drop, so you're killing Anafinza early. So
This is going to be a great replacement for Silk Wrap, probably.
Probably, because Silk Wrap, Jamoka's Command should make Silk Wrap. I hate running Silk Wrap because of it.
Yeah.
So this card is very good. It's going to give all the white-based decks a lot more gas. I think, honestly, this is something that, like, Esper Dragons is going to love.
Yeah.
Because it's
any white drop deck is going to play the heck out of this.
It's a very solid card. And in Limited, it's great. 2-drop removal is...
This over crappy rares, this is the first pick.
Yeah. Unless suddenly you start getting a lot more like attack triggers, this card's a house.
Yeah.
This card I would take every day, even pack 3, like if I'm at all near white, over the black card we talked about earlier that exiled your graveyard and hit your opponent.
Oh yeah.
I would take this over him, because it's just so much more of an uncontestable effect.
Yeah, 100%. Completely agree.
Yeah.
Card is awesome.
Oh yeah.
All right, next one. This is a card that actually got spoiled a while ago, but we haven't talked about it yet. And this is Ayli, whatever her name is. Eternal Pilgrim. She is a legendary core cleric for white and a black. She's a 2/3. She has Death Touch for 1. So this is already a problem. This is a 1 generic mana.
Right.
You may sacrifice another creature and gain life equal to the sacrificed creature's toughness. So, kind of cool there. And for 1 generic, 1 black and 1 white, you can sacrifice another creature and exile target non-land permanent. Active this ability only if you had at least 10 more life than your starting life total. So 30 is a magic number on this thing to turn on conditional Vindicate, which is pretty cool. Well, not Vindicate, but... What's the Utter End?
Utter End.
Yeah, Utter End on a stick.
They keep trying to make this exile a permanent that's not a land thing relevant.
Yeah.
But that is a ton of restrictions on
this
a card.
This is a pushed one, yeah.
It's I'm never the kind of player who's going to eat my creatures to gain life.
Oh, that's never.
Almost never going to happen. I mean, I guess it's another sack outlet for those rally decks.
Yeah.
There's not a bunch of life gain right now. That's part of the reason why the red deck is good, is because outside of Siege Rhino, life gain isn't the best.
Yep.
You have, like, Siege Rhino and Feed the Clans, and that's mostly it, aside from occasional, like, Surge of Righteousness for 2 life and things like that. So the amount of time you're going to end up 10 life over is very low.
Yeah.
I'm not a very big fan.
I think just the fact that she's a legendary creature, this was made for EDH, I can see this going into Soul Sisters and Modern.
Yeah.
And being pretty good. But as far as standard goes, this thing is just kind of... It's a really cool flavor home run, I think. If there's any kind of story behind Miss Ailey, it's going to be a cool story.
Yeah.
There's a reason she's doing what she's doing.
Yeah, you can... I mean, maybe if she's a renamed version of the core Planeswalker they printed in the Commander decks, like, that's a new name she adopted because she felt disappointed.
Oh, Nahiri. Yeah, yeah. Okay, I can see that. Well, she looks like Nahiri. She also looks like Stoneforge Mystic.
That's what we'll go with. This is Stoneforge Mystic. All this text is wrong. It's actually search for an equipment, one and a white tap, put into play. But I could see Soul Sister. It's too many restrictions.
It's a bit of a stretch.
There's a lot of text, which is normally good, but those texts have a lot of restrictions.
Yeah, definitely true. All right, the next one we've got. This one I'm actually kind of excited about because it's pretty neat. This is Goblin Dark Dwellers. I don't like the name personally, but this is a 4/4 Goblin for 3 red with Menace. And when it enters the battlefield, you may cast target instant or sorcery card from your graveyard with converted mana cost 3 or less without paying its mana cost. And if you cast that card, it is exiled instead of going to the graveyard. It's a really bad Snapcaster Mage.
Yeah, I mean, in all reality, it probably is. He rumbles better than Snapcaster Mage.
He certainly does.
Menace
is already impressive.
He doesn't care about color restricted spells. Nope. So, like, if you don't have a bunch of red mana, you don't have to worry about Snapcaster Mage, Crackling Doom, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But his flashback ability is very, very good. Yeah. Flashing back, Read the Bones, Crackling Doom. Any of those effects are very good.
Mm-hmm.
Don't flashback any Converge cards, obviously, because the Converge is 0.
Yep.
But I would say if you flashback... So you just think about it from this perspective. If you flashback any spell that costs 3 mana, this is a 2-drop 4/4 minutes. If you flashback a spell that costs 2 mana, it is a 3-drop 4/4 minutes. If you flashback a spell with 1 mana, it is a 4-drop 4/4 minutes, and that is when it starts becoming the most average.
Yeah.
A 2-drop 4/4 minutes is great.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you cast this dude and flashback Crackling Doom, then you got a free Crackling Doom and a 2-drop 4/4 with Menace, and you can't be sad about that.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that this is also the Buy a Box promo.
Yeah.
And the last Buy a Box promo that we had that was red was Goblin Rebel Master.
Yeah.
And that card was everywhere.
If this card didn't have Menace, it wouldn't be as impressive.
Yeah, and definitely. That's
but just like, a random Rhino can't get in the way of it. So he's a very good card. I think he's a very, very good, very playable card.
Yeah, part of me wants to see this thing at a cheaper cost with a slightly smaller body. But then we're pushing Snapcaster Mage territorials of power, and it's when it's in the battlefield. It's not when it gets cast, so you can blink this thing if there's a way to do that in Standard. This thing gets scary real quick. I think this is awesome.
Yeah, this card's going to be seeing play for sure.
Yeah, probably. This is probably not limited playability.
You don't really run very many spells in limited typically. So you'll still play in limited. It's a 5-drop 4/4 minutes.
Yeah.
But it's not at its optimal power level. That's more for constructed.
Yeah, this will find a place in Standard for sure.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. We've got our first uncommon. We have Walker of the Wastes. This is a 5 mana. It's a 4 and a true colorless. 4/4 Eldrazi. And this one actually has reminder text where it has the diamond symbol and it says represents colorless mana. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Has trample and it gets +1/+1 for each land you control named Wastes.
Very relevant.
Yep.
I don't know how he's going to be good in limited because, I mean, unless you're a monocolor deck, how many wastes can you afford to run?
Not many.
But traditionally, cards like this get pump on their power and not their toughness. The fact it pumps his toughness is pretty good.
Yeah, and this is still a 5-mana 4/4.
Yeah.
This is still Kozilek's Channeler.
It's still trample. A 5-mana 4/4 trampler. Doesn't ramp you. But the fact that he grows with wastes on power and on toughness is very relevant.
Yep.
Making it Your opponent might keep back. So say you play him on turn 5 and you have no wastes. And so they keep back 2 2-2s. Then you play a waste. They no longer have their trades. That's just kind of how it's going to work. So the ability to play a waste and throw off somebody else's math, like they always have to add one. Unless there's a way to cheat waste in, then they have to add more to how much they want to do if they're needing to trade for it. So if you're ahead, it's very good.
Yeah.
And even behind, it's a fair body. Because keep in mind, if you play him for 5 and you have a waste out, you have a 5/5 blocker. It's not just when he attacks. So that's pretty good.
No, this thing, I think it's cool. It's definitely a good... This is probably one of those build around in commons where you want to start picking up all the waste that you can and try to start forcing it into some kind of true colorless deck.
I would say it's got the potential to be that, but it's not even necessarily a build around. If you have colorless mana to cast him, like he is potentially first pickable on the sheer fact that if nothing else is very good in that pack, like you have the 2-drop 2/1 cloner in your pack, and that's your rare, and you don't have any good removal, this is going to keep you open still. If there's not a really sick card, this card will keep you open and he's still a relevant body for his cost.
Yeah. There's a thought experiment that just popped in my head, and I don't know why, so I'm going to throw this over to Sean. What would you say, what environment would allow dual lands to be island wastes, mountain wastes? I don't know why this popped in my head, but I just all of a sudden just thought of this. This card makes me think of waste duels.
In order for that to be a case, I don't know if that would ever be a thing. I could see them in future sets where colors comes into play, then printing a card like an island that can tap for a colorless.
Yeah.
And that's fetchable or something like that. That's fine. But the problem is I don't think they're going to have a set, at least not for the foreseeable future, heavy enough in this color to justify that.
Yeah.
This would be the only shot they have to do it, and I doubt they're going to do that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's definitely something that's possible for them to add an ability to get colors mana later.
Yeah. So, small thought experiment there. Don't know why I thought of it.
How many true colors casters do you need to actually need a card that does that?
Yeah, and does it make just the mana too good? I can just slam Kozlik in every deck.
Or is that even good enough? Because there's a lot of cards out there that tap for colors mana that do far more important effects than being fetchable.
That is true.
So is it even needed? I don't know if it would be needed.
Or maybe it's not fetchable. I don't know.
Right. But, yeah. Exactly.
So ignore my ranting.
That's the beauty of adding a new color to the wheel is that you get to have
all these cool things.
Yeah, this new perspective.
And then we get tri-lands that's like red, blue, and a colorless.
That's shivery.
Oh, yeah. But it's searchable. You can fetch it.
Yeah. Okay.
And then we just replace all of our steam bins because the card is just immediately better than steam bins. Okay. Moving on. Next card we've got. This is comparative analysis. This is 3 to blue instant. Target player draws 2 cards and it surges for 2 and a blue.
This card is...
I don't need to say anything about this card.
This card is... I love this card. I've been seeing for a while in Standard, there's not a great card draw spell. You have Treasure Cruise, but you really want to build around it.
Yep.
Dig Through Time is a good selection card, but it's not good early.
Mm-hmm.
This card is the kind of card you really want, especially as a control deck.
Yeah.
Because you want... The Esper Dragons deck, you want to have the ability to... keep counter magic open, but then not waste your time. So this gives you something at the end of their turn to do. This is the think twice that we had a while back.
Yeah.
So it's still not the best. I would love to see think twice instead of this card, but this card is completely fine.
It's okay because we get to go back to Innistrad in a couple months, and we'll get think twice back then.
It'll be
great.
Yeah, when that happens. But I mean, and the two-headed giant aspect of Surge means that like if you're sitting there and this card's in your hand, you've got 7 cards, and your teammate has 1 card, and they cast it, and it's a 1-drop. Then you could surge and give them 2 more cards. Because you obviously have things to do.
It is important that it says target player.
Target player gets to draw 2 cards.
I hadn't thought about that.
So in the two-headed giant aspect, that's pretty relevant. For constructive play, it's not going to be super relevant, but I still think it will see some play. That being said, unless you're running decks with Silmgar Scorns, you might not run as many because it is still a 4-drop.
Yep. So definitely cool, though.
Yeah, very good card.
I like it. And the art's cool because Jace is on it.
Yeah.
All right, next up we have the top 8 game day promo, which is the art on the game day promo, frankly, is awesome. The card itself is not very cool. And this is Jori N, Ruin Diver. It is a legendary merfolk wizard for 1 blue red, you get a 2/3. And whenever you cast your second spell each turn, draw a card.
Rarely have second spell clauses ever been very good. Yeah. There's been like a counter spell that counters a second spell a player plays every turn.
Which double negative, I think.
Yeah. The last few game day top eights were Radiant Flames, Languish,
Thunderbreak Regent.
And so like you had really playable cards you can run four of. Are you really running this four of this legendary 3-drop 2/3? Probably not.
Yeah.
Because you can't have them play multiple. If you could, then you could draw multiple cards, and that's a lot better. But if Tiny Leaders are still a thing, I'd be a little more excited. But it's still one of those things that's not... It's not very exciting to me, personally. If you're playing an aggressive blue-red deck, like maybe this could go into the blue-red Thopter decks, some of this, because you'll typically play a lot of spells in a turn. So this is not a bad little draw stick, but you don't want four of it. Yeah. I'd rather have four of the regular entry removal spell than four of this guy.
I think if I opened this, and if it was a throwaway draft for me, and if I opened this, I would try and draft around it. But this guy's just a hard sell for me.
I mean, think about it in limited aspect. You will often run into situations where you have no cards in hand or like lands in hand, and that's it.
Yeah.
You rip this guy late in the game.
It's a terrible top deck.
You have to sandbag the first spell, so the next spell starts letting you chain, and it just becomes really awkward.
Maybe if it was two cards.
Yeah. It's again, like I said before, if you have a 2-drop that does nothing to the board, he dies in combat, he doesn't kill anything in blocking, then you sandbag that card knowing he's in your deck, so you can play him, and then, because he does trigger if he's the first card you play, and then you play another card, he'll trigger.
That is true, yeah.
So, you can...
That might be his best application, then.
If you do it that manner, and you're getting one trigger a turn, you're sandbagging a card, then he's okay, but... Give him Island Walk, right? No. Give him something else.
Make some him kind of evasion.
In some manner.
All right, let's pull up a couple more. And I think we're actually almost done with all the spoilers we've had, so we can just go ahead and pull up the rest of them. Were there any lands that got spoiled?
The Seagate
record, yeah. And then we've got... Well, we touched on the on that guy. Okay, so we got a couple more to hit here quickly. All right, the next one we've got is Reckless Bushwhacker, the Second Coming of Goblin Bushwhacker. This is a 2 in a red for a 2/1 goblin warrior ally, so that's important in that sense. And it has haste, and it has surge for 1 in a red. When Reckless Bushwhacker enters the battlefield, if its surge cost is paid, other creatures you control get +1/+0 and gain haste until the end of turn. Pretty cool.
I was a little sad, like it's cool. I'm not a red player, but I was sad it's not as good as Goblin Bushwhacker was.
Oh, yeah.
Because Goblin Bushwhacker
was absurd.
you double red for a 1/1, but he was a great top deck if you were out of cards to play.
Yeah.
But this guy, I mean, yes, Surge is 2, but keep in mind, Surge in Constructed is typically 3 or 4 because you have to be able to play a spell with it.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate. He's good, but he's just... The creature types are very relevant.
Yeah,
but
that's all to say that the ally bit of this is the most relevant part of this. Yeah.
He's gonna be really good if you transition now that you know with Bob Light gone back into the Hordling Outburst Dragon Fodder lists.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He might be good in a red white list that runs like a Secure the Waste where you secure the waste for everything but 2, and then you play this guy and then you
and
swing.
Crush him,
Is it other creatures or
other creatures? Okay,
so he's a 2/1.
Yeah,
he doesn't get to be a 3/1, but. I mean, it's not bad. It's good. It's just he's a bad top deck if you're out of spells or you don't have the mana to play him and the other spells in your hand.
Yeah. So, kind of meh. Next one we've got the Glade Heart Cavalry with a new ability on here. This is a 5 green green elf knight, not an ally, which seems kind of weird because it has allies in its art. It is a 6/6. When it enters the battlefield, you support 6. I'm not quite sure if I understand how support works. I'm just going to read it off and see if I can make sense of this. You put a +1/+1 counter on each of up to 6 other target creatures. And whenever a creature you control with a +1/+1 counter dies, you gain 2 life. Let me see if I've got this. You play this, you have 6 1/1s. You now have 6 2/2s.
Yeah, I didn't read this one correctly to begin with. He's not as good as I thought. First of all, I think it's weird support isn't capitalized. Normally a keyword like that they're capitalized.
That's what threw me off too. So I'm really not sure what to make of these cards.
But they did announce this is your green intro deck promo.
Yeah.
The different disappointment is the way it's worded. As far as my understanding, again, I'm not a judge, but my understanding of it is if I have two creatures, I can't put three counters on each of those creatures.
That's the downside.
You can put a counter on up to six other creatures. So if you have one creature, you played this 7-drop 6/6 and made it a 7/7. And because it's whenever it enters, you can put one on himself because it's not other. Is it?
Well, it's, no, it's not other. On each of up to six other.
Oh, yeah.
So it's even worse.
Yeah, so I don't think it can target itself. So if that's the case, I would want to double check because the wording gets a little tricky with me. But
yeah,
he's not that. I don't think he's that great.
This thing's just garbage. Yeah. I'm going to put that down as my first flat out fail. Yeah.
It doesn't draw cards. I mean, gaining two life isn't that big of a deal, and you can only add one power. It's like a 7-drop lord for a certain number of creatures that doesn't care about creature type. So I'm not the biggest.
We look at a card like Sandstep Mastodon, which was from Fate Reforged, which had the bolster mechanic on there, which just made more sense. You just put 5 plus 1 plus 1 counter on the creature with the least toughness.
Yeah, you got the most value out of it.
Yeah, this thing is just kind of, I don't know, it's weird.
I'm not the biggest fan.
Yeah, definitely not. Next one we've got, it is Return of Stoneforge Mystic. Just kidding. This is Stonehaven Outfitter. This is a 1 and a white 2/2 for a core artificer ally. Equipped creatures you control get plus 1 plus 1, and whenever an equipped creature you control dies, draw a card. The three best words in Magic ever. So, how good is this thing?
I think it is probably not very good.
That's my opinion as well.
In history, plethora of equipments has not been very good. Yeah. You run a couple, that's about it. Keep in mind, there are Thopters and Ghostfire Blades around, but still, even then, like, it's not that good. I mean, the drawing effect is fine, but... So in order to actually legitimately draw multiple cards, you want multiple equipments that you're hitting, and you're not going to be having those multiple equipments typically. So he's going to be an okay card for, you know, some casual decks. If they print a lot of equipments out of nowhere, maybe he'll be a good limited card, but I don't see him being very strong in Standard.
And then in Standard, they have to print good equipment. They have to print busted equipment. We have to see Swords of Feast and Famine again before this thing actually goes anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, you have the Relic Seeker to go with him, which will the guy who renowns and tutors out an equipment, but he hasn't been very good because A, there's not equipments, and B, he has to hit your opponent for the Stoneforge effect. So I don't see him getting ton of play in either. If you open up and you're in white, he's your grizzly bear. That's gonna be about it. If you have an equipment and you throw it on him, sure.
Oh, yeah, that's cool, yeah.
But unless I open up two of him and like three or four good equipments, I'm not gonna really go too far into that pool.
Yeah.
I don't like running the equipments very often in limited.
Yeah. I am not gonna stretch my deck to support something like this you have to have a lot of equipment to get the full lord effect too. Like it's one creature's gonna be a bonus. Like that's pretty mediocre.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that if you suit up a flyer with three equipments, he only gets plus one, plus one. It's not for each equipment. He's okay. It's just that in order... You can only run so many non-creature spells in your limited decks.
Yeah.
And in order to run enough equipments to make him consistent, you need multiple of him and multiple really good equipments, which right now they don't have printed.
Yep. So, meh. Yeah. All right, next up, this is the white Entropak Rare, because the art changes right there on our site. Yep. This is the Munda's Vanguard. Do we know who Munda is?
I don't think so yet.
Because I've seen there's Munda... Oh, Munda Ambush Leader is the red-white ally that I'm trying to think of. Impulses for allies. Okay, so that's who Munda is. Problem solved.
No, Munda Ambush Leader means that Munda's probably their clan, the name of their group.
Oh, that's true. Okay, I can see that. All right, so this is a 4 and a white, Core Knight ally, 3/3, that has Cohort... which allows you to tap an untapped ally you control and the Vanguard and put a plus one counter on each creature you control. This thing's nuts.
It's good. He doesn't tap himself. So there are some very heavy restrictions onto him. In a limited aspect, as we've seen from Battle for Zendikar, the amount of allies you open is going to be a little tough.
True.
But a lord that has a growing lordship effect, like a Steel Overseer is one of the examples I gave below, is pretty good. So, especially, and you can't, I misread it before, you can't activate him the turn he comes in, which is disappointing, meaning that you have this 3 toughness guy who's just sitting there.
That's the only downside, but just to keep this guy back, or if you get the one that can give all your allies vigilance, swing in, and then tap, this thing's gross. Limited play, this thing's an awesome.
I would have loved to have seen them make this for Two-Headed Giant, and make it where, like, you tap an untapped ally you or your teammate controls, and put +1/+1 counters on all of your allies as a team. That would have been cool, but...
That'd be really cool, yeah.
It's still really strong. It's just... your ability to run him is going to depend on your number of allies. Like, I wouldn't want to pick one him in a draft.
Yep.
Because if somebody to your right is in allies, you start getting cut real hard. That's true. If you end up in the ally deck and you see him pack two or three, then sure. Or if he's in your opening pack, you don't pick him and he wheels, then maybe allies is open and now you snag him. But I don't know if I'd pick one him because so far there aren't enough allies to really guarantee that's going to happen.
Well, let me just the fact that it doesn't put a creature on a counter on each ally. It's every creature you control. You just need him and another ally.
Right.
So if you have at least him and four or him and three,
yeah,
then I think your number is actually okay then at that point.
Even at three, like you there's possibilities those guys have died earlier.
And that's true, yeah.
And there are a lot of allies that unless you're running a lot of allies, they're not very good. You're running bad allies to just run this one card. So because he needs another ally to activate, it is cool he triggers on every creature. It's really going to depend on either your seal pull or what the table's telling you to do in your draft.
Yeah, and that's true. But I would definitely pick this guy highly and build around
him. You got to keep a mental count. All right, I've got 10 allies in my pool. Snap him.
Oh, yeah.
Pack two, I've got zero allies in my pool. Sadly, pass this potentially very powerful card.
Yeah, definitely true. But still cool. Definitely cool. All right, next one we've got. This is Spatial Contortion. This is a one generic and one colorless mana. So this is going to be that for your first test of can you distinguish the two kinds of colorless mana from each other.
If you're trying to teach it to somebody, these are the kinds of cards to show them that there's a difference.
And it's good that it has a reminder text on here. And it gives a target creature +3/-3 until the end of turn. So this is Agony Warp Nameless Inversion for colorless. This card's awesome.
The card's really good.
Yeah.
Very reasonable spell. I haven't played in competitively in a little over a month, but when the last few weeks I was playing blue-green ramp, Eldrazi ramp. This card would have been amazing in that kind of deck because if you have enough lands, your Shrine of the Forsaken God is tap one land, kill a creature. And it's a removal spell that goes into any deck that has the colorless mana. So I think it's a very good card and it's really strong. And it doesn't get the soul shift ability of Nameless Inversion, but that being said, in limited, the fact that you can, again, pick one this card and still stay open is very good.
Yeah.
That's why I'm putting a little bit of a boost on any limited grade I give a card. If it's all colors, there's no color attributed, like Inbringer and this card, because it means if I can pick one this, I'm still open to start reading what the table's doing, and I have less likelihood that I whiffed on my first pick.
Yep. So definitely true.
Really important.
And it is worth noting that the times that you actually can use this on your own creature to get those last few points of damage are really something to think about, too. So just something as a removal spell, this is also
a potential one. It won't happen tons, but it occasionally might happen.
Yeah, definitely happens enough. All right, we've got two more spoilers for today. We have got a sorcery here. This is a 2-white sorcery, shoulder to shoulder, which is support to put a +1/+1 counter on each of up to 2 target creatures and draw a card. The drawing a card saves this thing.
Doesn't save it. It's support.
Well, save is...
gets close to saving it.
It comes... Yeah, it supports, reaches the handout at least.
Supports capitalized. It's the first word in the paragraph, but that's going to drive me nuts if all the other supports are capitalized except for that one card.
Yeah.
But 3 mana to pump 2 creatures +1/+1s is not very good in limited.
Yeah, and it's sorcery speed, too.
Yeah.
This is not a combat trick. This is a, hey, this is about to happen. Yeah. I'll take my 4 points of damage or whatever it's going to be.
Yeah, so like, if we look at the thesaurus, because we're on Mythic Spoiler, the thesaurus examples below.
Yeah.
Abzan Charm, tons of other options, good card. Common Bond, not many other options, never really played it, never saw many people playing it. It did a little bit because +1/+1s mattered in that Return Ravaging
set. It was insane in draft, though.
It was good in draft because +1/+1 counters mattered in that set.
Yeah.
They don't matter here.
That's true.
So,
that's true.
Yeah, so like your +1/+1 counters there were important. Here, not so much. And if you only have one creature, you're paying 3 mana to pump him one and draw a card. The fact that support can't go both counters on one creature makes it from not terrible to a lot worse.
I would need to see some ruling on this. What happens if you, shoulder to shoulder, target this creature and that creature, they kill one of them, does that fizzle the spell?
Yeah, because it's got multiple targets. Up to.
Right.
You can cast this. You can cast this with no creatures on your battlefield.
To just draw a card.
Because it's up to, meaning you can go 0, 1, or 2.
Okay, that and that makes sense. Though.
Yeah. Okay. So because the target is not a mandatory aspect, you can cast this with zero creatures on your board. Is my understanding.
Man, that's really bad then.
Yeah. That's the card is not.
Yeah. The art has Gideon on it, and that's kind of cool. So yeah. We'll give it a pass for now because of that.
Yeah, I don't see myself ever running this in any.
I would never.
Definitely not limited. This would be like my last pick, and I throw it in our donation commons box.
Yeah, this is a 24th pick.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do it anyway.
Yeah. Now, this card's different.
Yeah, this is the last spoiler for today, and this is Seagate Wreckage. It adds a true colorless mana to your pool.
It doesn't come into play tapped. Doesn't come into play tapped.
That's important, yeah. And for two and a colorless, so the and you tap it, you draw a card, and you activate this ability only if you have no cards in your hand. This card's awesome.
Yeah.
This is a reverse Library of Alexandria. And even with the condition on there, in a control deck, maybe like a blue-white or a blue-black or blue-red or whatever it's going to be, the game goes long, the attrition happens, you run out of cards, you've played your last counterspell, and you're just like, oh, look at that. Draw a card. And then draw my upkeep. And if you have multiple of these, you stack them. This gets out of control.
Yeah, so here's the beauty of it. Like you said, it's not legendary.
Yep.
If I have multiple of these in play, as long as I don't let them resolve when I activate them, I can actually put multiple on the stack.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to definitely see constructed play in the control decks, because if you look at the control decks right now, if you're not running Dragonlord's Prerogative, if you're not running Onyxilis, and you don't have an Ojutai in hand, you're normally playing one card to get two, so you run out of cards without too infrequent.
This comes with the new Chandra. With her zero ability to discard your hand?
No. Because you can't interrupt the middle of completion on that ability.
Can't?
Because it's all one constant text. Discard all the cards in your hand, then draw cards.
Oh, you can't interrupt man. I got excited there for a second.
Yeah, unfortunately, you can't interrupt the ability. But on this card, like it is very much a very good card advantage card, because at the end of their turn, you're gaining a card.
Yeah.
If you're the control deck, say you... There's a lot of times where... In the grindy Abzan matchups and in the mirror matches, mm-hmm. you're down to one or two cards in hand after a big slobber fest.
Yep.
And so you've got one Scatter of the Winds in hand, nothing else. Your opponent casts a spell, you counter it, then you activate this, and then you untap, you draw another card, mm-hmm. and you countered a spell and then went up to two cards. So that's good. Then one of those two cards is a land, you play it, and you're back in the same scenario. So
yeah,
I think it's a very good deck. I mean, not a very good deck. A very good card for... your slower decks.
Yeah.
Against aggro decks, if you're running this card, you're only ever going to use it for mana, but that's fine.
Yeah, that's fine there. Yeah. I was trying to think of a way, because cards used to do this where you would discard your hand or you would exile your hand to a point and then, like Memory Jar, where you would exile the cards of your hand and draw seven cards, and at the end of your turn, those cards would be exiled themselves and you'd get those cards back that you originally exiled. It's just, I don't think you can do that in Magic anymore.
No, the only way those cards work is if it gives you a clause on that having an extended time period. Because like if it's a situation where it's discard and draw, then like a Wheel of Fortune, it's a constant paragraph. If it's a exile your hand and then at the end of the turn draw cards, then you have that gap in the middle.
Because I think that's what Memory Jar, how that worked. And then stuff like Necropotence, where you get those cards on the end of your turn.
Yeah. I think I did talk a little bit about this with somebody before, where this does give Sarkhan's ultimate, and it gives the ability.
Voracious Dragon, yeah.
Yeah, because now you've lost your hand, but you can get extra cards and then draw more cards at your draw step, and that's fine.
Okay, the card's still cool.
Yeah, like, I would say
no two ways about this card.
I would say Abzan and control decks. If you want to run the color source and you can afford to run it, running one or two of this is completely acceptable.
Yeah. So Chandra doesn't work with it. It's unfortunate.
Even an aggressive deck, if it has a decent number of color sourced manas, like a red deck, if it can have multiple colorless mana, then you can actually run this in it to start refilling your hand if you've burnt out your hand.
Yeah.
So like if I play mono red and I have 20 mountains, I now go, you know, what is that? I could do 14 mountains, 4 Shivan Reefs, and 2 of this.
Yep.
And that's fine. I only lose 2 red sources, so that's a possibility.
Yeah. So incredibly, incredibly versatile card. And so that's all the spoilers that we've got for today. And now the last thing we're going to touch on here quickly is something that we kind of alluded to 2 weeks ago and didn't really say a whole lot about it, but we're actually deciding to do it, and that is our modern no-ban list gauntlet of power slugfest.
Yep.
And since what we're going to be doing, it's exactly what it sounds like. We're going to take, I think we decided on 8 decks, or a total of 8 decks, and we're going to say the kids' gloves are off, there's no ban list. What happens to Modern when you do this? And a couple of sites, Card Kingdom has done this with Rainy Bueller in a minute. The videos are really cool to watch, and we're going to do it for ourselves.
Yep.
So I know that you and I are going to do it, Sean. A couple of other guys are going to do it. I think we're going to have to use Cockatrice to do this because I don't want to proxy up 8 different decks.
No, we can proxy. It would be hard.
I guess it would be more fun to play with it. Yeah. Yeah, actually, I don't like the Cockatrice interface anyway.
No. It's just an excuse to hang out and play that's not competitive.
That is also true.
I'll proxy a couple decks on my own. Everybody, you could just say everybody has to proxy their decks. And it's going to be cool. Like, I think we've talked about 8 people and either 8 people having 2 decks or 8 people having 1 deck.
Yeah.
I like the 8 people having 2 decks to get a really wide range and run a gauntlet. If it gets into the gauntlet at a point where my deck has to face my deck, somebody else will pilot one of them.
Yep.
But I think it sounds cool, and I'm excited about the idea of being able to cast some of these very powerful cards that will never see Modern play.
Yeah.
A couple of these cards are never.
And originally we had kind of said that we only want to take decks that currently exist and incorporate their banned cards, so giving like Splinter Twin, Dig Through Time, and Preordain, things like that, and not using the decks that are created off of one card like Hypergenesis. No. But then we realized that's just not fun.
It's way more fun to do it the other way. Yeah.
I think it was. Who said they want to play Hypergenesis? I mean, it was Bitten.
No, I think Zach Elsick mentioned, like, he started rattling off stuff, and he quickly left the train of, like, understood, and started, you could see, like, this little, like, you know, hamster in a wheel just taking off, like, I don't know what he's gonna do. We're gonna draft the deck, so everybody has a chance to pick a deck they enjoy, so one person's not stuck with 2 decks they have no care about, because then they're not gonna want to build a good deck. Like, the goal is to have somebody care about the deck, let them build their own list, not find one online, that is how they will enjoy it. In order to do that, you want to make sure it's decks they care about. So we're going to draft it, let everybody have an opportunity to at least get one deck they really enjoy. And I think it's going to be cool. Like, you're going to be able to cast Dark Depths. One of the things I'm most excited about is just jamming Mental Missteps in, like, every single deck.
Oh, yeah.
I'm in the Mental Misstep every single Deathrite Shaman whoever picks up John plays.
Like, yeah.
So it's going
to
work.
I really want to see what happens with Splinter Twin when you get it back, the combo pieces that it had when it was first built, without Snapcaster Mages, and then give it those pieces again when it has Snapcaster Mages.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever seen there's an article series where it's the evolution of Modern decks, and you look at the very first Splinter Twin deck, which was 8 cantrips, Exarch wasn't printed yet, so Pestermite and Splinter Twin, and that was it. And then they didn't even have Snapcaster Mage until a year after it got printed. It didn't have Lightning Bolt to start off with, so what happens when you take the best version of the deck, theoretically the best version of the deck, and give it the pieces that it really wants to have and just go nuts with it.
Well, I think the more exciting thing is going to see which deck abuses the abilities more.
Oh, yeah.
Is Splinter Twin abusing Ponder Preordain worse, or is Storm abusing Ponder Preordain worse?
Yeah.
It's going to be those kinds of things that are going to be really interesting to find out. Like, is Abzan getting Deathrite Shaman more impactful than Jund, or vice versa?
Yeah.
Whenever they get the new shells. So it's going to be really cool to see which. That's kind of what I'm looking for, is like, which blue-white deck abuses Stoneforge Mystic better?
Yeah. Or is it even a blue deck? Is it Obzon that abuses it better?
Oh, yeah. That's,
is it a Siege Rhino? Obzon didn't exist.
Yeah. Or Boss Naya, like, when Stoneforge was in Mystic.
Yeah.
Was it standard?
Yeah.
Is Jace going to be in every blue deck? Only a few blue decks? Like, there's a lot of Umuzawa's Jit. That, like, where is that going to go?
Yep.
Obviously, like, Merfolk is a contender. Any deck with Stoneforge is a contender. Middle Misstep. Are multiple decks going to run Middle Misstep that don't have blue, or is it only going to be the blue decks touching it?
Yep.
So, like, there's going to be some really cool angles to go with. And I think what we talked about earlier is we're going to try to go over the lists after we have them before we actually do the event.
Yeah. I just want to hate Draft Affinity from James so we can play it.
No, I want the best players to take their decks.
Sorry, James. He's not here tonight, so he can't make a... He has an excuse, though. He was kind of stuck in the middle of nowhere.
No, you're right. He's not here. Now's when we attack.
So yeah.
That's fair.
That's fair, yeah.
It's the American way.
Yeah. So that's going to be pretty cool. We're going to try and get that done. I would like to have that done within the next month or so, because we got to do the review show for Oath of the Gatewatch, and then once it all kind of spoils down, we could put a lot of effort in this. I know some of our...
I think if we do, we should, because we're not going to get the rest of the Oath spoilers for about 2 weeks, we should do the draft and get the decks put together before then.
Yeah, because, we can do that. I can say that.
Steven,
yeah.
Who's regularly on the show, that's going to be leaving pretty soon. So we could actually aim to have this done in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And just have a Saturday hangout and do it.
Cool.
That sounds good.
So if you guys have suggestions for decks, there's a... I started a Reddit thread that kind of picked up a lot of steam and then kind of petered off for a little bit. But if you just search for EOT Newsflash on Reddit, you will find the thread there. Just kind of chime in. You can tweet any suggestions you have at EOT Newsflash. You can send them to eotnewsflash@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook and send us your ideas there. Nothing is off the table. Nothing. I don't matter how obscure it is. Let us see it. If you have a Trash for Treasure deck, go nuts.
Yeah, let's see what's there.
So yeah, that about wraps up for tonight's episode. We're pushing almost 2 hours now, so that's something when you have spoilers to talk about. I hope you guys are ready for our marathon spoiler episode, or review episode, because that's going to have everybody on it, giving their opinion.
We'll be far more streamlined. Cards that like support two, draw a card, we'll just flat out get the ref, we won't talk about it, we're going to read the card, give it its grade, and we're going to move past it.
I think I want to have like a buzzer too. To like just like buzz the card and like nope, not gonna talk about it.
Or we just hold up letter grades, and if anybody's got a crazy letter grade, they get to explain it. If a card's really good, then we'll like take turns talking about it.
We might have to do this as a video then, just kind of get our like just the reactions of cards.
That's true.
Because we're all quite animated people.
As long as we don't run anybody off. Like sometimes they don't want to look at us.
That's
so
fair.
Yeah, well, let's see.
Well, if you want to look at us, that's your own.
You could just put a piece of paper over your computer.
All right. Well, that does it. That's I'm clapping the clapper board.
Going to sleep.
Cut. We're done. But we do have we are looking forward to talking to you guys next week about more spoilers. The rest of the crew will be back from vacation, I think. So we'll have everybody back on the show. It's going to be great times. But definitely tune in every week. I'm probably going to start doing this on Tuesday now, just because Monday's an awkward day. I don't know. It's going to go up whenever I put it up. It's whenever I feel. This is my show. So, for me and Sean, check us out over at MTGCast every week over at the EOT Newsflash Network, and we hope to talk to you guys very, very soon. Y'all have a great night.